And welcome back to another episode of This Week on Channel 9. I'm Brian Keller.
I'm Dan Fernandez.
And we've got a ton of stuff to talk about today.
I know, dude. It's Visual Studio 2010 week on Channel 9.
Visual Studio Team System 2010 week.
Oh, that's right, because we're only talking about Team System now.
That's right.
For now.
That's it for now. For now. But yes. On Monday, we gave an official name to the next version of Visual Studio. So that's Visual Studio 2010.
Right.
And Visual Studio Team System 2010 and all that good stuff. And also the .NET Framework 4.
Yes.
So we announced that. And then you and I got to work with a ton of videos on Visual Studio Team System.
Dude, this is like you just blowing up Channel 9, man. And the picture-in-picture screencast.
Yeah, let's take a look at some of what's going on here.
Yeah, so just going through these, I think one of my favorites is the bottoms up.
Right.
VSTS 2010 architect stuff. Because there's so many times you, maybe you're downloading a library from the web, you're looking through a sample or whatever, you have no idea how to navigate that code.
Or it's your own code and you just haven't looked at it for a week or two.
That's probably true, right?
Yeah.
And you're like, okay, how the hell did I do this? And just the ways that you can visualize your own code, right? And to understand it is huge.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And the other big thing that we've announced for Visual Studio Team System 2010 is that we are officially supporting UML. So I think it's UML version 2.1 point something something something.
Mm-hmm.
OMG, we joined OMG. And so it's official now.
OMG!
So that's the modeling group that like owns the... I just said like. I'm saying OMG and like. Wow. I better start text messaging now.
I heard we're gonna join BFF Jill soon. Is that true? Is that
we don't comment on speculation.
Oh,
but,
that's right. All right.
But back to the point. So so this is bottoms up design. We also have another interview with Mark Groves where he talks about top down design. So how do you start from scratch and then kind of greenfield layout your application and figure out what blocks go where and use cases and.
So bottoms up is I have code, I don't know what it is, it already exists in some way or another. The other one is I am now going to do the design first and then write code.
Right, exactly.
Instead of starting with code and then figuring out how it's actually done.
Right, right. And so there's also another diagram that's not UML, but it's called a layer diagram. And that lets you do things like set up constraints. Like let's say that you your presentation layer should never talk directly to your data layer. You can define those constraints within the layer diagram, and then those constraints can be validated at
build time. Yeah, you see the red line.
Time.
That's
yeah,
right.
Exactly. Yeah. So we've got demos of all that stuff. So that went live on Tuesday, so that's Architect Day. So definitely go check that out.
Yep.
And then on Wednesday... Wednesday was basically kind of, you can think of it as project management day. We're calling it business alignment with Visual Studio Team System 2010.
Mm-hmm.
It's all about making sure that what you're building aligns with what your customers want or what the rest of your enterprise wants. So to give you an example, we have agile planning worksheets that are now built into Team Foundation Server 2010.
This is awesome stuff, dude.
Use it straight from Excel. You can quickly take a look at your backlog and figure out which tasks should be assigned to which people, and then run reports right within Excel that say, maybe you've got too much work, so we should, move that off of you onto another person, or define holidays that fall within your iteration when you're not going to have any resources available.
Oh, interesting.
So all sorts of just simple, quickly agile planning tools. And then this video that talks about requirements management. Requirements management is all about making sure that what your requirements are then get mapped to the individual tasks that the developer is working on. So as an example, maybe you have, implement a payment system as a top-level business requirement. Well, what are the things that make up with that? Well, we need a web page that has these buttons on it. We need some business logic that does X, Y, Z, right? And so the developer then goes out and works on those tasks, and those automatically get rolled up to the status of the payment system work item. And so we've got the hierarchy built in. That maps cleanly with project server and the project client. You can work with the hierarchy within Excel. So super cool stuff. So that was Wednesday. Then,
boom!
Moving forward. Actually, I think we're going to show a clip of this.
Yes. This is our friend Habib.
That's right.
Hadarian. So Habib, maybe some people have recognized him, at least in the greater Seattle area, for having the runtime license plate.
Oh, yeah? I didn't even know that, actually.
Yeah, he's got a runtime. All right. So Habib's well known as being on the debugger team and C-sharp debugging team, at least when those two teams. But do you want to just go to the clip or you want to set this up?
Yeah, so basically, you know, how many times have you been trying to find where that bug exists within your application? So, you know, you set a breakpoint, you run your application, and you're like, well, that didn't help me because this breakpoint obviously appeared after the bug happened. So then you set a breakpoint earlier on and you F5 your code and, well, that didn't help me. And so you're stepping through, you're trying to figure out what's going on.
A lot of times I can't repro. It works on my machine, like the nice little sticker.
Oh, of course, of course. But with this historical debugging, what you can do is you can basically wire up the debugger so that it's tracking everything and recording. You can set intervals for how long you want it to record back, but by default, it'll just record everything. So you hit a point in your application where you have a bug, and you're like, well, crap, I didn't set a breakpoint. Just fire up the historical debugger and just keep rewinding until you find that particular variable you're looking for is the wrong value or whatnot. And it's really like a time machine for your debugger.
It's like a flight data recorder too, right? It's like recording everything that's going on in your application, so if you need to do that. And those are all within every run of the application stored as well. So like you have it, hey man, why is it, you know, this thing somehow we had a regression in our software. Mm-hmm. When did it actually happen? Well, hey, I thought this was working and it turns out the version that was working wasn't, right? And you can sort of go back in time and build and see that.
And you can run it in production too.
Ooh.
So you've got
all
it
right,
running.
So we've
let's take a look.
Up.
Yeah. Let's take a look at a clip.
Over here, what you notice is that we've introduced a new window called the debug history window. And what this allows you to do is that it literally allows you to stop the application at the point where the problem happened. Hmm. And I think that's a huge, huge benefit because you don't have to set any breakpoints or figure out where you are in your application. So let me go ahead and close a few of these windows and show you what is going on there. I'm going to float this window. Bring it over this side here. Just maximize it a little bit so you can see what is going on here. As I mentioned before, one of the cool benefits of this historical debugger is its ability to record everything that the application does. And when I say by everything, as you can see here, the historical debugger has recorded all the events that have happened in the application. Here are all the registry calls that were made in the application.
Wow.
As well as the calls that were made in your application. So what I can do literally here is I can go ahead and expand the nodes. And look at this. You can quickly see with this red exclamation mark that there was something wrong.
So super cool rocket science stuff there.
I know. But, gotta love Habib, man.
I can't wait. I wish it was 2010 today.
But, I know.
All right. So next up on Friday, today, we actually have Team Foundation Server Day. So this is everything else that I couldn't cram into the other days that specifically relates to Team Foundation Server. So we talked about setup. So I actually have a video where Ed Holloway shows us during the video him setting up Team Foundation Server.
Wow. So it's a 2-hour video.
No, it's not. It's not. It's like.
Are you serious?
Yeah. It's like, so he sets it up. Now, granted,
he's gonna make it easier on my machine. So I heard.
Yeah.
Okay. So let's talk about the requirements changes because this is some news that had come out on the blog, so actually changing the TFS requirement.
That's right. So they are going to require SQL Server 2008. So TFS today supports, so 2008 SP1 supports SQL Server 2005, and you can also use 2008 with it as well. But they took the dependency on SQL 2008 for a number of reasons. I don't have the list handy, but there's a list of reasons why they really want to take advantage of SQL Server 2008. So in the end, that's going to make for better deployments. What that means is, of course, that you can't use SQL Server 2005, but you know we're talking about 2010 by the time this comes out anyway. So.
Right, so there'll be SQL Server 2030.
Yeah, exactly. And so what else do we talk about?
Do you want to go to the clip?
Well, I'm going to set this one up in a minute, but let me tell you about some of the other stuff that's happening today. So branching and merging visualizations. This is awesome. How many times have you said, I know I fixed that, and I checked it in somewhere, but I don't know why my customer's reporting that they still have this bug, or I don't know, you know, which branches this fix got merged into. Branching and merging visualizations fixes all of that. So you say, I've got, you know, a work item that then corresponds to these particular change sets. So let's say that work item's a bug. Well, these particular change sets might represent, you know, 5 source code files that I fixed in order to fix that bug. So I then query and say, where did this work item actually get propagated to? And I can say, all right, you know, main and dev actually have the fix, but the production doesn't have the fix because it's missing one of those five files.
Right.
So super powerful stuff. Take a look at that. We talked about Enterprise Team Foundation Server Management, which, you know, I won't bore you here, but basically if you have to think about how to deploy Team Foundation Server across thousands and thousands and thousands of people and scale it up, they're really doing a lot of stuff to help you scale, not just scale up the server, but scale that out as well across many machines.
So this is like a huge enterprise, like say we'd be deploying TFS inside Microsoft. Is that sort of like
target? That's one of the main scenarios. Another great scenario there is, let's say that you wanted to host Team Foundation Server and you wanted to set up sort of this app hosting model where you had other smaller customers connect. How do you do that? How do you do that in a way that supports multi-tenancy and allows you to move the databases around from one physical server to another? Today, that's not really easy to do with Team Foundation Server 2008.
It's not built for hosting and some of these environmental needs.
Exactly. So we also talked about Team System Web Access. So all these videos, we have a video with Brian Harry where he kind of sets up what his vision is for Team Foundation Server 2010. He talks a little bit about the farm that he bought and how he works on the farm in his spare time on the weekends.
Does he have a TFS that he puts, like, you know, his family members on?
Yeah, it's a Team Foundation Server.
his kids are like, sorry, can't repro, why the milk spilled?
No, he doesn't use Team Foundation Server, but I wish I got him to talk about this in the video, but offline he told me that there's software that he uses to actually track, you know, how much of his own time and how much of other materials go into, like, producing his first carton of eggs and all that stuff.
Oh, that's so funny.
And so you can then go back and see how much, you know, how much that sold for and how much you're making effectively. I mean, it's a hobby for him, right?
Right.
But anyway, I digress. What one of my favorite features in Team Foundation Server 2010 is what they've done with Team Build 2010.
Okay.
So in this clip, we'll show Jim Lamb, who's the program manager responsible for Team Build, showing off the Windows workflow integration with Team Build 2010. And there's just some really cool stuff in there that you can do. So let's go to the clip there.
Let's go to the clip.
Okay.
So I'll talk about that in a little more detail in this process tab, because this is really where you really see the context for how the build is structured.
Okay.
So this is the build workflow designer. And again, this is not what's going to ship in 2010, but this is essentially the idea. This is sort of our placeholder UI while we were waiting for the workflow 4 updates to get finalized. And what we've got here is a root activity. And for those of you not all that familiar with Windows workflow, I'll try to explain some of these terms as I quickly go through it. But the root activity is sort of the container for everything that happens during the build process. And it has some top-level properties like which solutions and projects to build. This sort of maps to the old wizard we had in Orcus in 2008.
Oh, sure.
The tests to run, and there's some other properties on there as well. And then within this, there's this activity called select an agent and build. And this activity is where we actually pick an agent out of the pool to execute this subset of the overall workflow.
Okay.
So over here I've got a property called reservation spec. And in this property I can actually, let me expand this, specify a particular agent. And you see here I've got one agent here defined in this particular pool. And the star represents any agent, so any agent can be used. I can also specify tags. Now this is a new concept in 2010 as well, where you can assign tags to build agents. And a tag might represent something like, this one has BizTalk 2006 on it, this one's got SQL 2005 on it,
this one,
you know. So if you have some dependencies in your build environment, you can tag your build agents with those dependencies so that your build process knows, okay, well, for this part of the build, I need this kind of agent.
Gotcha.
So I think that's going to be exciting. I don't know how many times you've tried to look at MS Build and try to build your own build tasks and everything.
Yeah, build tasks. I always screw up the directory stuff and nothing outputs, and then it's like, it like lolcats me. I don't know. Epic fail. Yeah.
But
it's like, why did this, how did you know, Visual Studio, how did it Rickroll me?
Yeah.
What the hell happened? Jeez.
So now you
I
don't
must
need...
have missed a dollar sign somewhere.
Exactly. So now you can put down your MS Build reference manuals and you can just use the, I think, fairly intuive graphical interface for using the workflow designer.
I need it, right?
Yeah, definitely.
Just because you don't live and breathe, unless you're a build guy, you don't live and breathe it, but that time you need to do, like, rather than having a great, crazy learning curve, UI.
Right, right. And you can run parallel parts of your build in parallel across multiple machines, and you can use build agent farms. And if that stuff's exciting to you, you have to watch Jim's video. It's just awesome.
Yeah, those are some of the things, like the in parallel stuff, where I'd love it if we just like, okay, how fast can we build windows?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and like we just take 1,000 machines and we divide up parts of the windows. Some of the things the Halo folks are doing for their build stuff in the Lightroom.
Definitely, yeah. This will make it easier for all those scenarios.
Yeah, okay. So, changing the subject, you aren't the only thing around
here.
Well,
I'm done. I'm going to go then.
Don't pull a Hanselman on us. Okay. Dublin released.
Mm-hmm.
Or we started using the codename Dublin.
Talking about it, right.
Steve Martin, no relation, talks about some of the technology enhancement in Windows Server. And so here's the thing. He has to be incredibly vague. Mm-hmm. So we don't really know.
I would love to get
it's
a Channel 9 video.
Application platform. Yeah, so there will be a Channel 9 video. I don't know when exactly mm-hmm. this can hit and at what point they're going to be ready to talk about.
But
they're letting
Steve Martin,
us know.
Yeah, so Steve Martin talking about WCF enhancements, WF enhancements, as well as this thing called Dublin,
workflow.
It's supposed to make it easier for you to manage and orchestrate those services across Windows
Deploy,
Server machines.
All
that good stuff. But again, it's just a code name. We don't know, but we hope to find out for you.
Maybe it's App Center Server Relaunch, if you remember that product.
No,
from
actually,
year
I don't.
2000. Oh, yeah. Scott Guthrie actually on his blog got a couple announcements, but one of them is Silverlight 2 RC0
mm-hmm.
is now available. So Scott goes through step by step and shows how to use. And just to get this right, Expression Blend 2 Service Pack 1 Preview, which allows you to use Microsoft Silverlight 2 RC0 together. So you can actually do, you hit the edit template, and you get to actually see the interaction and see the different states within control states.
Nice.
Right. So they add a number of controls. Go to Scott's blog and check it out, and it's available for download now.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
Good stuff.
Cool stuff. The other big announcement on Scott's blog was jQuery.
Yeah.
So jQuery is actually going to ship with ASP.NET MVC and Visual Studio.
Yeah, this one's really getting a lot of pickup in the blogosphere, I think, because it's an open source library, right?
I know, and we're shipping open source. We haven't done that since like the Java, Sun Java days, right? Ever since like after that stuff, and we probably shouldn't even go there.
Yeah.
So let's cut that conversation.
Yeah, Lee's going to have to review this video.
Yeah, exactly. But I mean, the nice thing is jQuery is a very small library.
Mm-hmm.
It has visual effects, right? So doing things like fade in and fade out. And there's already pretty good tool support, but the team is really like, okay, so how can we take this to the next level as mm-hmm. well, too? And it's a tiny footprint is the other nice thing. So it's not going to be a huge impact on your site where you're, say, downloading 100K JavaScript library to use something that you only need, like, that one fade-in, fade-out effect for.
Right, nice.
So, yeah, cool stuff.
Okay.
From a tools perspective, since we talked about the Silverlight 2 RC0 release,
mm-hmm.
They actually have a set of Visual Studio tools that they released that supports RC0 specifically. Now, the nice thing is those tools now support VWD Express.
Oh, the Visual Web Developer, the free download.
Yes.
Nice.
So you download and install Visual Web Developer Express 2008.
Mm-hmm.
I think you need SP1,
mm-hmm.
and which is the default version if you're just downloading now. And you can apply this, and now you get Silverlight tools for free.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. So good stuff, and glad they're making it available for everyone.
Yeah, definitely. So our buddy Clint.
Yeah.
Talking
Clint
about... Clint Ruckus. So he wrote some samples that basically show off how to use the new Virtual Earth Web Services APIs.
Yeah, so this has like a geocode, reverse geocode, mm-hmm. and they're .NET APIs that you can call. It's the SOAP calls, right?
Mm-hmm.
So to do either geocode, reverse lookup, or access directly to the tiles. So like another sample that we've seen on the web is people doing like the deep zoom and accessing the tiles directly. So you get that nice deep zoom effect in Silverlight. And it's using these APIs.
Nice.
So, but if you're looking for a way to get started, zoom in, zoom out, all that stuff, Clint has it for you.
Great. Good job, Clint.
So
Amazon EC2 with Windows.
Elastic Compute Cloud. So the cool part is Amazon's web servers are now going to be supporting Windows.
Mm-hmm.
So let's say, for example, you're using Amazon S3 already
mm-hmm.
for your ASP.NET startup. You can now use EC2. Actually have ASP.NET hosted on there, or media encoding services.
SQL Server.
Hosted on there. SQL Server.
Yeah, that's
connect
huge.
To it directly from Visual Studio.
Yeah. That's awesome.
So to me, this is really huge and a great thing. It isn't live now. I think maybe they're doing some stuff. And we know Prashant, and Prashant told us to thank the Amazon team.
Prashant Sridharan, yeah.
Yes. Yep. Old school Microsoft.
Yeah, this is true.
Yeah. Cool stuff on the Amazon side.
And, of course, tons of cloud services stuff happening at PDC as well. So.
Yeah, I know. Everybody's going to the cloud. And then we had Richard Stallman, if you saw that one. He said he did his... imitation of the Star Wars general saying it's a trap.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, whatever you use, don't use cloud services because it's a trap.
Okay.
Richard Stallman, okay. Anyways, WPF application quality guide.
Yeah, so we've been talking a lot about these quality guides. So we talked about Windows Home Server as a quality guide. So, you know, how do you build your UI that kind of meshes with the rest of Windows Home Server? And now WPF has an application quality guide to help you write better WPF applications.
Yeah, so it's everything from UI, testing, automation, everything in between there. So I love this kind of stuff because it's always good to, if nothing else, scan through and see sort of what they recommend or what they look at, and you'll find some gems in here.
It's a great checklist.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
that's available.
Check it out. It's available for download.
So another CodePlex project, XML Visualizer V2.
Yes. So I am a big XML visualizer. There's these things called debugger visualizers. Hit a breakpoint. Mm-hmm. I have an in-memory XML stream. Let's just say it's from YouTube.
Okay.
You guys scared you there.
Plugging your book?
Yeah, exactly. So this is one of the problems is you hit the XML visualizer, you can only see that chunk of XML and you can navigate it, but if you're within, say, an X element, it doesn't actually render because it will tell you that's not a valid XML because it doesn't have the question mark at the beginning, right? So what some folks did is decided to build their own XML visualizer and actually enable you to do, and you can just download this, you add it, and then right-click, you can say use the normal XML visualizer, or you can use the XML visualizer.v2.
So you're right-clicking within Visual Studio, and then it
launches out. On a breakpoint, on a memory thing for an X element, assuming I'm using link, and boom, I can now apply an XSLT directly to that. I can do search and replace. Mm-hmm. A simple thing, it's like, man, I gotta find, you know, the name of the, or the storage location for a file or something.
Right.
Just control, it has a built-in searching. And
that's hot.
XSLT. Yeah, so it's a simple thing. Every developer should just go and have a nicer debugger visualizer.
And since it's on CodePlex, the source is available, so if you wanted to look at how do you set up your own debugger visualizer that interfaces with Visual Studio,
yes.
I'm already thinking, you know, how many times have you been trying to compare, like, two arrays, and you're like, what's the difference between these two arrays? I would love a visualizer that said, you know, pop this array, and show me, you know, graphically.
That's actually really easy to do.
Yeah, that'd be great. There's a sample for someone to go build.
Yeah, file new visualizers. Yeah. Actually a project template, too.
Nice.
Or at least in C#. Flickr Explorer.
Yeah.
So, another application here. Yeah. So what this is I got to remember the URL, flickrmvc.net. Mm-hmm. But it's a pre-built MVC app that shows you how you can call all the Flickr link APIs.
Right.
So you can actually, you know, search by tag, comment, author,
right,
all that stuff.
So it's like two samples rolled into one. You can see how to build an MVC application. ASP.NET MVC application?
Yes.
And how to call into Flickr.
Yeah.
So, great. Yeah. Goodness.
Yeah, so good stuff. Download it. Always good to see some examples like that.
Mm-hmm.
So, PDC's coming up. And
it is.
Yeah, so one of the things they're doing is if you're in, I guess, Southern California or...
Greater Los Angeles area.
Greater Los Angeles area. They're having a free event called the Underground at PDC. This is Lynn Langitz, actually.
Oh, right. Developer evangelist. Yeah.
Yeah, so... you can find more information about it on Facebook, which is apparently where all Microsoft events are.
And there's a ton of PDC stuff to talk about. You know, just pay attention to MicrosoftPDC.com. Speaking of PDC, so this is Adam Kinney working on these build your own badges.
Yes.
What a cool concept.
Yeah, so he's got the C9 Poser badge, and I think we're going to have some this week on Channel 9 badges. So if you see us at the show, we'll have some badges. If you can actually identify us, so all four of you that actually watch the show and will be at PDC.
We'll autograph them. them to?
Yeah, well, we got to have something special. Tape like a $5 bill or something to the back of someone.
Please, take our badges.
We're desperate.
but really cool. So you can get, the idea is kind of like the Xbox achievements.
Yes, right? So you can, it's analog achievements, right? Yeah. So you can build your own, too.
Yep, exactly. And you can go, like, doing a particular hands-on lab might give you one as well. So it's kind of neat. It'll be interesting to see how many people come back with.
Maybe we can do, like, referee. Like, we'll wear, like, this black and white and, like, present it as, like, a card. Like, pull it out. Like, yellow card.
Exactly. Yeah. Nice.
Maybe not.
So time for the picks of the week. So, you know, it's Visual Studio Team System week. I've got to go with the old Visual Studio Team System. But, you know, we've been talking about VSTS 2010.
Express.
VSTS 2010. And a lot of people are probably saying, that's great, Brian, but I don't want to wait until 2010 to take advantage of all these capabilities. So I want to tell you about something that's coming within the next few weeks, and that is the next release of the Team Foundation Server Power Tools. And so Brian Harry blogged about this yesterday. It's just awesome, the amount of features that they crammed into this thing.
Yeah, so I love the shell integration. Like, seriously, when you showed me that, I was like, oh.
Yes. So this is
so
like,
just walk through that for people.
Yeah, so the idea is, you know, it's like Tortoise. If you're familiar with Tortoise and how it integrates with Subversion, then it's along the same line. So, you know, let's say that I don't use Visual Studio, so I don't get to benefit from the integrated Team Explorer. So let's say that I code in Emacs or Notepad or Expression. Even.
Expression.
Yeah. And I want to, you know, take advantage of Team Foundation Server Source Control. Well, what the Explorer integration gives you is basically the ability to map directories on your local machine to source code folders on Team Foundation Server. So you can get that whole check-in, check-out experience without having to go through the Team Explorer shell. Of course, certain things that you want to do in Team Explorer still, like work with work items, that's still going to be required there. But if you just want to do, you know, take a directory and put that under source control, now this power tool will be able to give you that ability.
Yeah, I love this stuff, man. I'd be able to right-click, see a file, and actually be able to check in or check it out.
Oh,
that's
awesome. But wait, there's more.
Tell me, Brian, what do I get with my free gift of TFS Power Tools?
So, commandlets for Team Foundation Server. So, we've got commandlets for all the popular commands, check in, check out, get latest, all that stuff. Also, there's IM integration. So you'll be able to, you know, right-click on a change set, for example, and say, let me start an IM conversation with the person who checked this in.
Can't believe you checked in this crap. LOL.
Exactly. And then that has a provider model. So, you know, it'll work with whatever IM client you want to hook it up to. What else? The concept of team members. So there's a new team members node within Team Explorer. So you can see who's working on a particular project. So if I want to say, you know, what's this folder or what's this team project? Who's associated with it? Who has access to it? You can quickly see that now from within Team Explorer. I feel like there's a couple others I'm missing, but anyway, you've got to check
out. Go to Brian Harry's blog
post.
And we'll
have just, it's like literally like 5 pages long. So
it's
awesome. Awesome.
And how much does it cost to get this much value?
I'm glad you asked, Dan. That's free.
Free!
But call now. Actually, in a few weeks when they release it. Call then. Yeah.
And completely changing the subject.
Yep.
My pick of the week, and this is actually from Adam Kinney's blog, but it's Quake and Silverlight.
Yeah, that's
so
hot.
Yeah, I know. Some folks have what's called Quake Light. And what they did is use Silverlight, added some 3D and texture mapping. Mm. So they do have a YouTube video.
Nice.
But we haven't seen the actual source code or the page available. So
for all we know, they're pulling our legs.
So, yeah, exactly. Yeah. So all we know, they could be running it
I implemented Quake in HTML.
No kidding. They should do that. That'd be hilarious.
Yeah, we'll put together a YouTube video.
Oh, man. Ooh, I have the rocket launcher. It's like flat. It's like the flash tag or something.
Yeah. Blink, yeah.
Blink, thank you. The flash tag. Oh, that's ever so ironic. Okay. So this is cool stuff. Check it out. But I love it when people do cool game ports. And if this is real, it'd be like in C#. So, like, wow, cool. Yeah. You got a Quake mod.
Yeah, there definitely. Good stuff.
So that's everything we got.
That's it.
Full show.
We'll see you next week.
Thanks.
Right.